Welcome to episode 51 of the Fredcast for the week of January 15th, 2007. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. Welcome to a special episode of the Fredcast. This week's show is a bit longer than normal, and, unlike most of our weekly shows that feature a bit of news, product features, upcoming rides, etc., tonight's show is on one topic, nutrition. But first, this episode of the Fredcast is brought to you by Cambria Bicycle Outfitter, providing quality products and unparalleled customer service to the cycling community for over 20 years. Every week, I'm choosing some of Cambria's best products and placing them on a special Fred's Picks page. Check it out by going to www.thefredcast.com and clicking on the Fred's Picks link on the left-hand side of the page. Cambria Bicycle Outfitter, they outfit the world. What you're about to hear is a one-hour-plus recording of the live call-in show we did last week via TalkShoe.com. The show features Graham Street, owner of CycloCore.com, and the developer of the highly acclaimed CycloCore, CycloZen, and CycloSpeed training programs. Tonight, Graham talks about nutrition for cyclists, always a hot topic, and he tries to bring cycling nutrition down to earth for us everyday cyclists, making it easier to understand for those of us who don't have and don't want a degree in biochemistry. Graham also talks about his new CycloFuel nutritional training program and takes questions from Fredcast listeners. I hope you enjoy this special edition of the Fredcast. I'll be back in just a few days with another regular episode of the show. But in the meantime, sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes a special edition of the Fredcast. Our guest this evening is Graham Street from CycloCore.com, and Graham was with us on the show the last time we did it, and we got such a great response that I asked him back, because Graham just has a ton of information to give to Fredcast listeners and what Graham calls the everyday cyclist. Graham, welcome to the show.
Hey, David, how are you doing?
I'm great. How are you tonight?
I'm good. Glad to be here.
I'm really excited that we have a lot of listeners online and a couple on the phone. We'll see if they're brave enough to come on tonight and ask questions, but I'm glad that everybody came on and decided to listen to the Fredcast instead of the president. Thank you very much for that. Graham, tonight I thought, you and I talked a little bit before the show what we were going to talk about, and I thought a lot about this over the last couple of days when we decided to do the show. Tonight's topic is going to be nutrition, and I think more than any other time of the year, I think that during the off season is one of the times when a lot of cyclists think a lot about nutrition, and so I think that the timing is really, really good. You know, I've told you before that I went out and I bought books on nutrition, specifically aimed at cyclists and active athletes. And you know what? After the first couple of chapters, first of all, it was hard to get through the first couple of chapters because they put me to sleep. They wanted me to become, you know, a scientist. Well, the reason I got my degree in political science was because I hated science. So, Graham, let's just talk a little bit about nutrition. And just talk a little bit about what are, and we'll get into the details here in a minute, but what are some of the basics that the everyday cyclist needs to know about nutrition in order to make sure that their body is fueled properly, and whether that's in the off season or in the regular season? Just give me the basics.
I think that to start, the most important thing for anyone that wants to live a healthier lifestyle, that wants to ride a bike faster, that wants to, you know, lose body fat, retain lean body tissue, is that what you'd said earlier is that there's plenty of different diet books, diet fads, the low carb this, high carb, low fat, all these different conflicting things. And I for one, who have a degree in nutrition for years, was as a professional just as confused as my customers were, my clients were, because every day it seemed a new expert was coming to the table and saying, hey, you know, that low-fat diet you've been doing is wrong, or hey, that low-carb diet you've been doing is wrong. Here's a new way to do it. I think what we really need to look at first is that no one is more intelligent about your nutrition than you are. I think it comes down to each individual taking responsibility and taking action and using common sense above everything else. So no matter what I teach the listeners tonight, it's imperative that you think for yourself, you use common sense, and then if something doesn't feel right when you're eating it and you're questioning whether or not, you know, is this really healthy for me? Is this really going to help me achieve my goals? Then it probably won't, no matter what any expert says. Now, with that being said, now we can get started with the nuts and bolts of what nutrition should mean for the everyday cyclist. First of all, I think it's, for simplicity's sake, let's break down cycling or cycling nutrition into two primary categories. Primary category one is the avid recreational cyclist that's looking to lose body fat, lose weight, and improve overall health, which is a high part of the market. With this concept in mind, we have people that want to eat foods that are healthy, foods that are going to help lower their cholesterol and improve their blood pressure, help them lose weight, so on and so forth. Then we have category two, which is more of the avid or high-end cyclist that is beyond all that. Yeah, they want to be healthy and everything, but let's get right to the nitty-gritty. They want to ride faster. They want to perform better. They want to win races. They want to do record century rides. They want to clobber their friends on Saturdays. Those are the two simplicity primary categories. The irony is that both categories, both groups, really should be operating under the same types of basic common sense principles. For instance, principle one, eating small, balanced meals often. Now, everyone that's probably listening has heard that a billion times over. I should be grazing on food, not gorging on food, where I'm having, you know, 2 to 3 small meals a day plus 2 to 3 snacks per day. That's a given. It's common sense. That the trouble is that most people know that, very few of us actually do it. And this is where the diet books don't really help out, meaning that they give you all the rhetoric, all the biochemistry, all the jargon, all the, hey, we know this, and you don't know anything, and you have to follow exactly what we say. The problem is that they don't do a very good job of helping you put it into action. And I think what I try to get across to my customers and clients is that, above all else, consistency and action are always more important than rhetoric and jargon. So you can know a whole bunch, but if you don't put it into action, you don't really know anything.
Well, let me ask you a question on that, Graham. But before you move on, let me ask you a question about that. Because for me, you know, there's two aspects to my day job. On the one hand, sometimes I'm in an office for 8 hours a day and I'm sitting at a desk staring at a computer or talking on the phone. The other aspect of my job is that I've got to travel and see customers. In both of those situations, what you've just said, you know, eating small meals often can be really difficult for two reasons. Number one, if I'm on the road, finding those good meals, because you know it's so tempting to just stop at the fast food joint to stop at, you know, the TGI Fridays and pick up the buffalo wings. Or if I'm in the office, you know, it seems like all I'm doing all day is eating. So what just sort of practical tips on that line before you move on, can you give to the everyday cyclist when it comes to how do they do that?
Well, I think that the trick is staying ahead of yourself. I think that you need to become aware of where your obstacles are on a given day. So for instance, I work, you know, I own my own company. It's a global company. I have people emailing me, calling me. You know, meetings all day long. It's nonstop for me. Plus, I'm a father and I'm a husband, so I'm just like everyone else that's listening. How do I deal with it? Well, number one is that I make an agenda every morning where I wake up at a specific time. I try to keep that as you know, the same every day as I can. So that part of my schedule stays the same. I have breakfast the same time every day. Pretty much I have the same breakfast every day because, again, I eat more for nutrition than I do just for pleasure. So although breakfast is my favorite meal of the day, it also serves a very pivotal purpose. That first meal will often dictate how well I eat the rest of the day. So if I nail breakfast, more than likely I'm going to nail my first snacks. First snack for me is typically 8:30 or 9 o'clock in the morning. I had breakfast at about 6:30 or 7. If I rode in the morning, that could change things, but let's leave that for next part of what we're going to talk about. I think the bottom line is you need to have snacks available at your desk, in your car, while you're traveling. You need to take a proactive role instead of kind of throwing yourself out there into the world and saying, man, I sure am hungry, and it's been like 6 or 7 hours since I've eaten. I've been in meetings all day. Let's go grab, you know, McDonald's. Let's go grab a burger. Let's go grab this. And then, of course, the vicious cycle starts, and you start to feel guilty, and you start to kind of perpetuate the cycle. So, again, healthy snacks, wholesome snacks that you should have at your desk available as often as you can. Are you always going to be perfect? Absolutely not. I think it's important to recognize that you can't always be perfect, that you will make mistakes, but if you can bypass the mistakes as often as you can, you're going to make headway. So if you want to talk about the pragmatics of what those snacks should look like, we can talk about that. I don't know if that's what you're asking.
Well, yeah, I mean, in a way, yes. As a matter of fact, I just wrote that down while you were talking. I wrote, what is a healthy snack?
A healthy snack, well, let's talk about healthy food first, regardless of whether it's a snack or not. I think when people think snack, the first thing they think of is snack food, junk food. So let's first prioritize what is wholesome food, and then we'll talk about snacks, if that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
The wholesome food is really what we're after, the whole nutrition program that one should be on, snack, meal, or whatever, fat loss, performance, the same principles are still the same. Wholesome, natural, unrefined foods. So what does that mean? First of all, let's talk about what it's not, what we're trying to remove, the junk food that typically people have in their diet, refined sugars, saturated fat, hydrogenated soybean oil, things that are added to food to make them more palatable, to make you want to eat more of them, so on and so forth. The things that a lot of times we aren't even aware that we're eating. You know, that's one of the problems with the low-fat diet that I saw, was that all of a sudden out of nowhere, they were removing the fat and replacing it with trans fats or high sugar content. Next thing you know, people are gaining weight like crazy because their insulin's flying out of control and things of that nature. So I think it's important to first recognize removing the junk food out and replacing that with wholesome foods. What does the wholesome foods mean? In a very simplistic manner, it means unrefined foods, things that ideally, if you can get them, are organic foods, meaning that they have not been processed, they haven't been bleached, they haven't been beaten to a pulp, packaged into a fancy package, and put back out. And I think the easy way to think about it is if when you're going to the grocery store, if you go to the grocery store, if you are spending the majority of your time down the middle of the aisle and you're buying things in plastic packages and boxes as a staple, and those are the primary foods you're eating, you're going to run into problems. If you're more on the outskirts of the supermarket buying wholesome fresh vegetables, fruits, grains, unprocessed cereals, you're buying, you know, organic meats, or you're buying, you know, fish, things of that nature, you're more on the right track. And that's, again, it's not black or white. There are some in-betweens there. And again, I'm not trying to confuse the issue, but again, this is not all about you're either eating perfectly or you're not. And I think that's one of the major things that people run into, is that, hey, I'm either on a diet, I'm eating well, or I'm the exact opposite. I'm eating terrible, and I'm so off track, and I feel horrible as a result. It seems that most people fall into one of those two categories. What I'm hoping to help people understand is that you can be somewhere in the middle and find really true happiness. You can be healthy, happy, perform better, lose weight, and still not go insane about your food.
But Graham, does this mean that I've got to stop shopping at my local supermarket and start going to a natural food store?
No. I think I'll let you know what my wife and I do.
Okay.
I'd say 80% of the total food we buy at our local supermarket. Most supermarkets today, by the way, have really shifted, if you've taken notice. You know, there's a lot more healthy foods there. There's a lot more organic and natural food. So I think that's definitely making a change, and I think in the next couple of years we'll see even more. I'd say 80% of our food we buy at the grocery store, and about 20% of the food we buy from a health food and wholesome food store. So no, I do not request or require my customers or clients to have to buy organic, to have to go to a wholesome food store. If you can afford that kind of food, and again, the irony is that healthy food definitely is not cheap. And the food manufacturers, they plan it that way. This is not a mistake. Junk food is cheap and easy to make because it's chemicals. It's stuff that you can manufacture in large quantities, where wholesome food takes more care, it takes more time, it takes more manpower. So because of that, there's more dollars associated with the sale of those products. But I think at the end of the day, you have to look at it from a value perspective. If you're spending 25% more on your food, but you're getting a 25% increase in your vitality, your energy, your cycling performance, you have to ask yourself if it's worth it. Now, you know, most of us as cyclists will run out to, you know, the bike shop and drop, you know, $100 on a new, you know, cassette for our reel, or, you know, $5,000 on a carbon frame and not think twice about it. But someone asks us to, you know, spend another 15 or 20% on our food, and we're at a rage. So I think it just comes down to the change in perception and value. If you put your health, your nutrition, your training first, no matter what kind of bike you ride, I think it's going to make a major shift.
You know, it's funny because you're right. You'll see people go out and they'll spend a couple hundred or a couple thousand dollars to shave a few grams off their bike, but they won't do what's necessary for their nutrition to shave several pounds off their body. And in all honesty, that's what's going to get them up the hill faster.
Without question. I've got a great, just a quick, great story, a testimonial story or a sample story. I actually have a friend of mine, and I typically don't bring my friends into the foray of my business. I deal with business all around the world, and I always keep friends out. But in this case, I can't help myself, and I actually told Tim, I'll call him Big Tim. He's my next-door neighbor. I've been riding with him for the past couple of years. He's my favorite. He's my best friend. There's no question. And I love riding with the guy. Tim is Big Tim. There's no question. He's about 6'6". He towers over me. And he's about, on average, you know, about 225. Well, earlier in 2006, in the off-season, as an avid cyclist for the past 20 years, you know, he was under the illusion that, you know, in the off-season as a cyclist, you just gain weight. And I think last year he was going through quite a bit of different changes with work, much like most of us do, and it caused a lot of stress. And he started kind of turning to food as a way to kind of cope with the stress. Well, he gained like an additional like 20 pounds. I think he went up to like 240, 245. And he decided, you know, after, you know, kind of feeling like that, that he wanted to really get back into his passion, which was cycling and putting more effort into it, and really starting to feel better about himself. And he really went on a mission in 2006 and really put a lot of commitment and a lot of time, paying more attention to his food. Did he do dramatic things to his diet? Absolutely not. The irony was is that he just really just focused on the consistency of good, wholesome meals, and more importantly, removing the junk food that really had become a staple in his nutrition. He put more time into the bike. And by the end of 2006, he had lost, I think he said, 35 pounds.
Wow.
And every single, it wasn't the weight loss that surprised us as strong cyclists. We have a group of a pretty strong, you know, good cyclists here in my area, and we get together quite a bit. And even some of the, you know, 140, 150 pounders that are just, you know, just weight weenies, really strong in the hills, excellent cyclists. All of us were just floored with what Tim was able to do, not just in the flats, but now in the hills. I mean, this guy was really putting some serious pressure on us. He hadn't bought a new bike. He hadn't done anything fancy. He just stuck to his guns and did what was necessary. And even now, every one of us is just inspired by this guy. I mean, I do this for a living every day, is to inspire and motivate others. But this guy, you know, just floored me. And I said, Tim, you got to let me talk about you with my customers. I got so many people that want to learn what you did. And he said, Graham, I really didn't do anything but take care of myself. I just put myself first. I removed the junk food that was there. I put some more time and consistency into my training and my nutrition. And this is the result. And I think what that proves is that no matter what I teach you, no matter what little tricks or things you'll read, that consistency and I think strength of character really at the end of the day is what's going to drive healthy nutrition. Everyone that's listening right now, come on, we really know what healthy means and what non-healthy means. We do. The problem is a lot of us don't know either A, how to implement it in a feasible format, or B, we're not willing to yet. We're not willing to step to the plate and say, hey, as much as I like my honey glazed donuts before my 60-mile ride, I'm going to pass today and instead have, you know, an apple or an orange or whatever that might be. So it comes down to a conscious decision, I think, at the end of the day.
So I guess the first thing that I guess your first tip of the evening is, you know, eating good meals, often, small good meals often throughout the day. So it sort of begs the question, what'd you eat yesterday, Graham? What was your meal day like yesterday? So, it'll give people a great example of what you're talking about.
Breakfast. Much like every day, I have one egg, either scrambled or fried with olive oil. I had a bowl of organic fiber cereal. It's almost like... I can't think of the name of it. It's really good stuff. I can't think of the name of the cereal. But there's a whole bunch of different organic cereals that my wife buys for us, and we kind of mix and match them over the week. If I don't have cold cereal, I'll have oatmeal, which is definitely a staple for me. If I'm in a fat loss phase of my cycle fuel program, which a lot of my listeners, if they're using fuel, they'll know what I'm talking about. I might remove that oatmeal and replace it with either fruit, or I'll actually remove the carbohydrate for that breakfast. But that's typical for me on a daily or bi-daily basis. Snack for me would typically be, you know, mid-morning I'll have an apple and some almonds, or I'll have an apple and half of a Hammer Nutrition bar, or I'll have an orange and some cottage cheese or things of that nature. So simple and quick, things that I can just reach for really quick. You know, low-fat yogurt would be something that I would use. I try to get it organic because a lot of the low-fat stuff will have chemicals and other junk in there that I try to avoid. Lunch is typically a salad and something left over from the night before. Late afternoon snack is typically maybe pretzels or tortilla chips with organic salsa. Sometimes I'll have, you know, half of a sandwich. So if I had a sandwich for lunch, I'd have the other half a sandwich for my second snack. And then dinner, you know, ranges between, you know, chicken, vegetables, rice. We do a lot of organic noodles. My son loves organic noodles, so we eat it probably 3 or 4 times a week. Lots of vegetables. I do arugula salads. So again, nothing fancy. There's nothing in there that's really impressive, nor should it be. In fact, the irony is that the more simplistic you keep it, the more results you tend to get.
Hey, what about the I don't know what time you eat dinner or what time you go to sleep, and I'm not going to delve that much into your personal life, but what about the conventional wisdom that after a certain period of time or within a certain period of time of going to bed, you shouldn't eat something? Does that hold true?
Well, I'm going to mention my CycloFuel program because these are topics that are of major precedent within that program that I try to really isolate, and I'm definitely willing to give the information away to everyone because I think that everyone should know it regardless. I think the bottom line with nutrition is that a lot of us don't want to learn the biochemistry of nutrition and how foods react in your body and all that, and I'm fine with that. I've got my degree in that stuff. I understand how it works, but I understand that a lot of people don't want to learn all that jargon. Fine, but I'll give you the basic principles of why food plays such a critical role in your performance, fat loss, health, so on and so forth, is that food really is your external link with the environment. It's your way that your body communicates with the environment because the foods you eat really dictate who you are, and that's not just a saying, it's true. I mean, the chemicals that you eat become who you are as a person physically. And the way you feel, the way you metabolize things is all the same. So what it really comes down to is how your foods react and cause your hormonal systems to change. So why wouldn't you want to eat food right before bed? Well, in simplistic terms, that when you eat food, insulin goes up. Insulin's a hormone your body produces. You know, it allows the food that you're eating to be shuttled into your muscle cells, into your liver, so you can utilize that for energy, so on and so forth. Insulin is a very powerful, very necessary tool for the human body. It's one of the most powerful tools for the human body. However, there are times during the day or during the course of an event where you don't want insulin present. It doesn't work for you. It actually works against you. And we're talking about eating before bed. When your insulin is going up as you're going to sleep, you're not necessarily putting on fat because of the insulin. The problem is going to be is that the insulin will cancel out another hormone called growth hormone. I'm not going to get really deep into this because we can go on for hours about it. But the growth hormone, bottom line, is the grandfather hormone of the human body that helps to perpetuate vitality, healthy skin, strong legs, healthy lungs. It's that recovery hormone of all hormones. Why do you think the most popular drug used in sports today is synthetic growth hormone? There's a reason for that. That growth hormone is the gateway for recovery. And everyone knows, if you really know anything about performance, he who can recover the fastest will perform the best, all things being equal. So you take two equal athletes, whoever recovers the fastest and the most complete will win the race, guaranteed. And that's why people would supplement with that. The irony is, though, is that the human body produces it every day, unless you're getting in its way. So for me, I try to keep about a 2 to 3 hour window before I go to sleep. And that's to negate the effects of insulin and allow growth hormone to do its job. Growth hormone has a tendency to want to come out of its pituitary gland at about 2 to 3 hours into sleep. So if you have insulin present while you're sleeping, growth hormone doesn't want to come out. They don't work at the same time. It's kind of like, you know, if one is in, the other one's out, so on and so forth. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally.
So that's where people get that from. And it is very powerful. You want to pay attention to that kind of stuff. Again, I think more people, because they're not taking an active role in their nutrition, they're just saying, hey, just tell me what to eat. Don't make me think. Well, fine. I'll give you some ideas and some templates on what to do. But if you're not willing to take at least some kind of part in the understanding of what's going on, you're always going to struggle with your nutrition. And that's what I deal with customers and clients every day. I'll have people say, hey, Graham, why would I want to buy your nutrition program? Why would I want to spend that kind of money where I can go to, a bookshop and get a $20 diet book, or I've got 50 on my shelves already. What can you possibly teach me? And I'll always say the same thing. If those $20 diet books that you've bought at the store helped you, you wouldn't be calling me asking about mine. Because the bottom line is that most books, most things on the planet sell with some kind of angle. What's the angle? The low-carb angle, the low-fat angle, the grape juice diet angle, something that, seems obscene. And, yeah. And this is a multi-billion, almost a multi-trillion dollar industry. What people are buying is the hope that they won't have to take action. That's what that's all about. So, hey, all I have to do is eat cabbage soup and I'll lose weight and feel great. What is it? It's just not taking action. It's not taking responsibility for what one's eating. And so I think what the Big Tim story taught us is that Tim wasn't doing necessarily any kind of fancy stuff. All he was doing was paying attention and trying to be as consistent and focused on himself and his health as possible, which really at the end of the day is what's gonna get you the results you want. I've always said that, if you have the right training plan, if you stay focused on it, you're going to get results, unless some idiot created the plan and they have no idea what they're doing. But even the most basic plan, usually the success comes from the consistency and the passion behind doing the work as opposed to just the formality of the work itself.
So I'm guessing if you asked your friend Tim, then he wouldn't have said, oh yeah, I'm on a diet. Because, I mean, what you're saying is this isn't about being on, Atkins or low carb or, as you said, the grape juice diet or whatever it is. People aren't talking about, at least you're not talking about dieting. This is lifing. I don't know. This is a whole life change.
Yeah, I think it is. It's a lifestyle. I think it's just like cycling. Okay, I think if people start to think of their nutrition like they think of riding their bike, it'll make it easier. Cycling, everyone that's listening can probably nod their heads and say, this is a lifestyle. It's a place of my life that I feel comfort, I feel joy, I feel challenge, I feel an opportunity to grow as a person. Most of the people that ride a bike, they do it not because they want to win races, they want to be, in the next Tour de France. They do it because they want to reduce stress, they want to smile on their face, they want to be with their buddies, they want to go out and have fun, they want to challenge themselves to grow. Well, nutrition is the same thing. We got to change our perspective as a collective whole. I think we've been so conditioned to believe as a society that we have to be on a diet or not on a diet, that in essence what we do is we just kind of run around in circles, asking our questions of, hey, what am I going to do this New Year's to make my resolution to lose those 10 pounds so I can climb my mountains better? I think at the end of the day it comes to, what are you willing to do every day, not just, the first of the year? So this time of year, I remember when I was a personal trainer, it was, my business went from good to, my waiting list would just grow so long that I couldn't even deal with it. And everyone was looking for the same thing. They were looking for me as the trainer to give them the answers. And all I can really ever give anyone, training, nutrition, or otherwise, is useful, common sense information that most people at the end of the day probably already know, or at least they should know. And all I'm trying to do is help them install action, a formality. So like my fuel program, my cycle fuel nutrition program, the bottom line is that the information that's in there, if you were to take it to pretty much any nutritionist, physician, whatever, you can't debate the information I really put in there. It's sound, common sense, straightforward information. No tricks, no angles, nothing. What I gave my customers, though, was an opportunity to organize a system that they can use in a practical, simple, and repeatable format. And that's really what nutrition's about. I think that people want to find a new way to eat every meal. And that's where you run into problems. You want to find something that's consistent, something that is approachable and practical. If every meal required you to, have a four-star chef cooking it for you, well, it's not going to happen. If every, meal requires you to have, turnips at every single meal, it's probably not practical.
Hey, along those lines, Graham, let me ask you a question. I'm going to try to play this on for you and hope it's going to come over the microphone. But one of the listeners asked a question. They actually called in ahead of time called the voicemail line for the show. And it's exactly about what you're talking about, you know, not eating, not having a four-star chef or not eating turnips at every meal. And I thought this would be a perfect place to insert it. I hope this works. If it doesn't, I'll edit it into the show later. But I'm going to sort of move the microphone so you can hear this. So hang on, and we'll see if we can make this work.
Hi, David. This is Christopher in Chattanooga.
Oops, wrong one. Hold on. That's the wrong one. This is the right one. Here we go.
Hey, David. This is Rick. I kind of had a quick question, if you could throw it in for tonight's live show, since I won't be there due to work. I'm a college student, and I don't have a lot of money to buy, you know, the right foods. Pizza's always cheap, and, you know, the cup of noodles. I was just wondering if you could ask him... what kind of nutritional food that's good and, like, kind of low price for a college student? So any food that's, you know, low price, pretty high up there in nutritional value, that's easy and quick to get and obviously easy to make, preferably with a microwave.
So I hope you heard that, Graham. Could you hear that clearly?
I could, yes.
Okay, so Rick's question, he's a college student. You know what it's like to be a college student living in the dorms. What do you recommend?
Well, I gave some, I call power foods, things that are very high. He was asking about high nutrient density foods, which is exactly what we're aiming for as a high majority. Things like legumes, beans, certain whole grain rices, pastas. We want to stay away from, you know, cereals are big in college, obviously. Some people just survive off cereal.
Cereal and pasta, right?
Yeah, cereal and pasta. I think what we'd want to do there, though, is that a lot of people will tend to buy the cereal that's overly refined, lots of sugar added, lots of chemicals, very what we call low nutrient density. So although it has lots of calories, it doesn't offer us really any benefit. There's very little protein. There's very little vitamins and minerals. Everything's been kind of extracted and replaced with sugar and flavor. What we want to do is kind of shift the palate towards more high-fiber foods. So you're looking for, let's take cereal as an example. You'd want a cereal that has a good fiber to calorie ratio. So if you have a cup of cereal and only has 1 gram of soluble and insoluble fiber, it's probably not very beneficial right off the bat. A cup of cereal should have about 3 to 7 grams or more of fiber. That's going to increase the nutrient density right off the bat. It shouldn't be refined or processed. That's going to increase the nutrient density right off the bat. It should be, you know, ideally if it could be, it could be organic, but that's not going to dictate necessarily nutrient density. You have that with, you know, low-fat milk or even 1% or 2% milk, and you've got the protein to balance out the carbohydrates. I think the thing for a college student to really think about, or all of us to think about, is for every meal and every snack, we want to try to use a system called complementation. And all that simply means is the ability to balance carbohydrates, fats, and proteins as often during the day as we can. So, for instance, you're not going to see me sitting down and eating, if I'm eating tortilla chips, or they're organic tortilla chips. Organic tortilla chips, by the way, are wholesome tortilla chips. Will tend to have higher fiber and higher nutritional value because there's more fiber in there, sometimes more protein and more nutrient density. If I have that with organic salsa that has beans in it, I just increase my nutrient density again, as opposed to having, you know, some of the more name brand stuff that really doesn't have anything in there besides, you know, liquefied tomatoes and sugar. So I think it's the little things all added together. One specific food, if I was to say, hey, that person should just eat, you know, whole grain pasta or fortified pasta, and that's going to solve its problems. No, that's not going to solve the problem. It's one part of a bigger piece. But I think by looking at multiple meals, you might want to start using whey protein or organic whey protein to supplement the protein that could come with carbohydrate sources. In fact, when I was in college, which is when I did more bodybuilding than cycling, I had to deal with these issues a lot. And the biggest problem that I had was the amount of protein that I needed to ingest to retain that kind of body tissue. I struggled with, you know, what am I going to eat for protein in all these meals and snacks? So what I would do is I would spend most of my time worrying about where I'm going to get my carbohydrates, which are much easier to get, much easier to attain, whether you're in the house or out of the house. And then I would supplement my protein with whey protein or milk caseinate protein to kind of balance out the meals. And I would use flaxseed oil for my fat. I'd use peanut butter for my fat. I'd use egg yolks for my fat, and that would kind of balance out my entire day. Eggs are super high, you know, protein value, but also very dense. They got a bad rap because of cholesterol, but science has proven again and again that it's really not the cholesterol in the egg that causes the problem. It's all the added fat of the other food that comes in during the day that can really cause the cholesterol to spin out of control. So looking at multiple different foods, combining them together in small meals is the most important thing to do. So just having a thing of ramen noodles is probably not the best thing for you, but if that's all you could get for your carbohydrate source, maybe having the ramen noodles with, you know, 3 or 4 ounces of lean chicken that you bought the night before, you cooked maybe 4 or 5 pieces on a Foreman grill in your dorm room or whatever, now you've got the balance to the meal. So it might not be perfect, but it's definitely better. And I think that's the biggest thing to look for is improvement, not perfection.
And that's a great idea, you know, because so many people in their dorm rooms, they have the fridge, they have the microwave. I don't know whether they've thought about the George Foreman grill, but I think that's
it's
a perfect
fantastic
way to do it. Yeah.
You know, they weren't available when I was in college, but they are now. And man, there's you can do so much. I think for whether you're in a dorm room or you're a busy professional and you're stuck at work, you know, all day long in meetings, you don't know what to do. I mean, leftovers are truly, you know, the saving grace. And if you learn to really utilize how to cook your food and then how to store it and use it over time, you're going to get so much more out of it. What I mean by that is, you know, if you're going to cook chicken on a Sunday night for your family, cook a couple extra pieces for yourself. If you're going to do it on a Foreman grill or you're going to bake it or whatever you're going to do, cook some extra, cut it into portions, whether it's, you know, 3 ounces, 4 ounces a piece, and there's your protein portion per snack or per meal for the next 3 or 4 days. Problem solved. Now you have to add your carbohydrate source, which again I mentioned to you is usually the easier thing. So let's say you brought your chicken in to work from the night before. Now all you have to do is worry about going to the cafeteria and grabbing some carbohydrates. Now the carbohydrates can obviously get tricky, as I mentioned earlier, because we're talking about a lot of foods that have added sugar, chemicals, and not much nutrient density. So some things will work, some things won't. Again, it's not perfection, but you know, if you can find pastas, rices, cereals, breads, those are great, but I want you to be very conscious of those kinds of foods. I think as cyclists, the carbohydrate issue is a misleading one. I think that we've all been kind of led to believe through what the quote-unquote pros eat or what the Olympians eat to quote-unquote fuel their workouts that we as everyday cyclists tend to fall under the same category and say, hey, I'm a cyclist. I did 50 miles today, so let's go eat, you know, 3 bowls of pasta and a couple bagels, and I don't have to worry about it because I'm burning all the calories and storing the rest for my next ride. Well, part of that's true, and part of it's not. I think that there's a problem. We want to distinguish between quantity and quality. You can have very low quantity food, but if the quality's high, you can get a very high return on it. If you have a high quantity of food but very low quality, although you're going to stuff your glycogen stores full, you're probably also going to, you know, tack on a whole bunch of fat, body fat, which is probably not what you're looking for as the avid cyclist. So it has to be a balance between those multiple variables. It's not just, hey, you know, cyclists just eat carbs, carbs, carbs. And I meet cyclists that do that all the time. I can't tell you how many events I've shown up. And I still just can't believe it. I'll show up for, you know, metric centuries or centuries, and they're on the table, right, you know, at 6 o'clock in the morning before we all, you know, start these events, or, you know, bagels, donuts, cookies, you stop at the 30-mile markers, there's more sugar. And I'm like, look, yeah, I understand that carbohydrates are necessary to, you know, fuel our workout. But, man, we're not supplying the right carbs here. We're not supplying the right food. This is, sure, it's quickly assimilated, so on and so forth. But, man, it's coming a lot with a lot of extra baggage on top of it.
Okay,
and
so, go on. Sorry, go on.
No, I think the biggest problem is that we've been kind of led to believe that it's all apples to apples, not apples to oranges. And what I mean by that is that a carb is a carb and a protein is a protein, and they're all the same. Just get enough in the day and you're all set. Or, you know, calories in, calories out, which is such an antiquated method that I still don't understand. That I'm not saying that calories in, calories out isn't correct. What I'm saying is that it's misleading, meaning that, hey, if I want to lose weight to climb a mountain faster, I'll just, you know, I'll skip breakfast, I'll skip lunch, and maybe I'll eat dinner, which a lot of cyclists do. Runners are famous for that, too. And we have other cyclists that are the exact reverse. Hey, you know, I'm burning all these calories, I'll double my intake, I'm not paying any attention to my food. So I think that we've been kind of duped with that. I think the bottom line is that most of my clients and customers that listen to Reason and use some of my nutrition program information will find that you're eating less, but the quality and density of the foods that you're eating really compensate and allow you to get much more out of it, which at the end of the day is what I'm looking for. I don't know what everyone else is looking for, but I want to look as good as I can, feel as good as I can, and ride as strong as I can without feeling bloated and fat at the end of the day.
Hey, Graham, you mentioned something a couple of moments ago, and that was about, you know, when you show up at a Century or a Metric, and we've all seen it, you know, the table is piled high. There's just a mound of bagels and all these carbs that are there. And one of the questions that just came up in the chat room, coincidentally, was, all right, I'm doing a Century or I'm doing a long ride, and I get to either a rest stop or I get to the lunch stop, the so-called lunch stop. And usually you'll find there'll be turkey sandwiches or, you know, there's peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. In a nutshell, really quickly, because we got a question online that I want to get to, but what should people be eating when they go to these?
I think the only thing that I can say there is do not rely on the rest stops dictate the food you're going to eat for any event or ride. And that's the easiest thing for me to say. And that's going to make people kind of sit there and go, huh? Well, I don't get it. Then what the heck do I eat?
Yeah, why'd I pay all that money, right?
Take responsibility for the food you're going to eat. You wouldn't depend on someone else to have the tools there to fix your bike if you got a flat, right?
Yeah, you're right.
So why would you depend on other people to feed you when you stop at the rest stops? And that's what hundreds and thousands and millions of cyclists do all the time. And typically the results are always the same. I bonked, I ran out of energy, I didn't feel so hot. What happened? I kept on eating the foods they kept giving me, but I kept on running out of energy. And the reason why is that the foods were incorrect. Foods that cause a huge insulin spike during activity are not the best choices. Just like we talked about, you know, that try not to spike insulin before sleep, same thing with exercise. Your digestive tract does not want to be in full active mode while you're going 20 miles an hour on a bicycle for 100 miles.
So what do you think people should carry with them when they're doing one of these rides?
The bottom line is that good nutrition for any event starts the days and weeks beforehand. I think people put way too much stock into the calories, the hours just before the event, during the event, and after the event, and not enough time into the days and weeks before. That's the first place to start, and I have to mention that. Then I think that people consume too many carbohydrates, too many refined carbohydrates, right before the ride. How many times do we see people gorging down that food saying, hey, I gotta get those carbs in there so I can have a good Century? All they're doing at that stage, if it's an hour or two before the ride, is they're increasing their insulin. They're actually causing their body to go into a state of depositing that insulin into their body instead of taking the blood sugars that stored glycogen and allowing the body to utilize it. They're actually reversing the process they're looking to utilize while they're on the bike. I guarantee you go to any professional sporting event, professional, Olympic or, you know, Tour de France kind of stuff, you will not see professional riders gorging down carbohydrates and food right before the event. If the Tour de France starts at 9:30 in the morning, they were eating at 6 at the latest. And they weren't touching food for the next 2.5-3 hours. They were then fueling on a consistent basis for every 30 to 45 minutes of intensity exercise throughout the ride. They're using hammer gels, they're using goos, they're using power bars, they're using whatever it may be. Now, I'm not going to go into details about all the different kinds of supplements you could utilize, but the bottom line is that you should be using easily assimilated, wholesome, unrefined foods during the ride that are easy to digest. So sitting there and chomping on an apple during your ride isn't going to do it. But also, chomping on an Oreo isn't going to be a good call either. Because eventually what's going to happen is those calories are not going to give you the nutrient density you're going to need to perform at your best. I'm not saying you can't finish the Century on an Oreo, but you're probably not going to have the best Century you ever thought you would, unless you got lucky.
Wow. Okay, we've got a question online, so I'm going to bring our questioner on. When you come on, tell us your name and go with your question for Graham. Stand by. There we go. Are you on?
Hi, David Tuttle, and I have a question regarding the cycle fuel. In the time of the fat burning phase with the exercise, I kind of started that this week, being after the holidays, and just tripped through it a little bit and went back, and I'm going to try it again next week. And I just wanted to know how important it is to correlate with the exercise in the morning and then, like, skipping out on the Wednesday.
Well, the fat loss phase, you know, the 7-day fat loss phase that incorporates into the cycle of fuel nutrition program is basically the only time that I will really kind of request of you to follow a very structured exercise and nutrition protocol. And the reason why it has to be that structure is that if you don't follow those guidelines, you could tend to lose energy, or you kind of get that, man, I'm tired and beat up kind of feeling. And that's not what I want for you. I want you to feel as good as you can all the time, but I also want to kind of kickstart your metabolism. If you can't stick with the exercise protocol of the fat loss phase, that is okay. You can still get results with the fat loss phase. I've got plenty of customers over the past couple months that have been able to do that without following verbatim that exercise portion. Just do the best you can. If you need to swap a day, or if you need to change the intensity because your common sense is telling you to do so, then I support that 100%. I think at the end of the day is that it's a 7-day cycle, and you're going to get plenty of times over the next months, years, and decades to practice it. You're going to get better and better. And not every time you do it can you do it exactly as I asked you to do it. And I understood that when I created that part of the program.
So, Graham, because for those of us, or for the callers and the listeners, because quite frankly, that was a bit of Greek to them, tell us what he meant by that phase of the program and what the phases are. And again, you know, folks, this isn't an advertisement, but I think it's important that, you know, we understand where Graham's coming from on this.
Well, David Tuttle was asking about the Cycle Fuel Nutrition Program, and he was requesting about the fat loss phase. My Cycle Fuel Nutrition Program, and I'll mention it for a second, but then let's just talk about just basic nutrition. What nutrition should be, much like training, is an oscillating format of both calories and the content of those calories, meaning that most of us will change our training intensity on the bike in a given month, 3-month period, 6-month period, 12-month period, or at least we should be. We shouldn't be riding the same way all the time. Not if you want performance. If you want more performance, you should be changing how you're riding, the intensity, the volume, the frequency. And my argument is that your nutrition should be the exact same. And a lot of cyclists won't do that. They won't change their nutrition to match the intensity of or the volume of their exercise. And as a result, they get very frustrated that, hey, I'm out there on my bike every day, I'm training, I'm doing this, I'm trying that, but man, I'm just not getting very far. Well, what did you do with your nutrition that was different to help basically support that change in exercise intensity and volume? Well, I don't know, I'm just going to be eating the same stuff. And that's probably why they're not getting the results. So what I did with CycloFuel is create a 3-phase methodology: fat loss phase, maintenance phase, and the performance phase. And what you can do as the consumer is every 6 weeks you can create your goal. Let's say that your goal in the next 6 weeks was to be 5 pounds lighter and faster or stronger on the hills. Okay, so you might want to be using a combination between my fat loss cycle to help you burn the body fat and kickstart your metabolism, quickly move into a maintenance phase to establish some kind of base, and then jump right into a performance phase. And that change in eating, which is very subtle, by the way. These are not dramatic changes, but they're enough change to make a difference in your physiology. If you're combining that and using common sense to match that to your training, you've really got something you can work with. And that's why CycloFuel will work for any cyclist of any level, because at the end of the day, you can mix and match the fat loss, maintenance, and performance templates that I give you in the program to match your needs and goals.
Tell me that I don't need a degree to get through this program, because that's the biggest problem I've had with every book and program I've ever picked up. And I'm not going to say it. It just makes me mad.
Myself as well. And I have a very high interest in that kind of stuff. I love, you know, the biochemistry behind it. I love endocrinology. I love neuroendocrinology. I love all that stuff. That's what, you know, that's what I was schooled in. That's what I was passionate about. I think, though, over the years, you know, through experience working with clients, I knew, you know, without question, my clients couldn't give a hoot. They just want to say, hey, Graham, just tell me what to eat, man. Stop wasting my time.
Yeah, and that's totally where I'm at. I mean, that's and I think that's where most of the everyday cyclists are. They want, you know, they just want to tell me what to eat and I'll do it. And you know, if that makes me a better cyclist or it puts me in better shape, that's what I'm looking for. Hey, Graham, we got another caller online. Let me bring that person on. Yep. And let's see. Hold on one sec. There we go. Caller, are you on with us?
Yes, can you hear me?
Excellent. Tell us your name and go ahead with your question for Graham.
Okay, my name is Curtis Bainham, and Graham, you may have already kind of addressed that right now, but I'm in the weight loss phase I'm kind of in right now, which is really just trying to lose a little bit of weight before the spring season and lose a few pounds versus when you're riding a little harder for a century. Can you talk a little bit about the types of foods, weight loss versus when you're actively training for a century?
I think the food selections, by and large, should actually be the exact same. They really should. The wholesome food should always be the trump card. Does that make sense? Meaning that no matter what phase you're in, fat loss, performance, maintenance, the food selections should always be the same. What's going to differ is the quantity and the content of the meals. For instance, during the fat loss phase of my fuel program, or any good fat loss driving program, we want to use timing and the quantity and or the content of food per meal. So what I basically did in my 7-day fat loss cycle is basically manipulate the carbohydrates of an individual on a 7-day oscillating phase where we're basically taking from day 1 through day 3, we're decreasing the incoming carbohydrates into the body. By doing so, I do two things. Number one, I automatically begin to reduce your stored glycogen. And we all know that means our stored energy, our stored sugar for performance. And you might say, well, why in the world would I want to do that? I'm a cyclist. I don't want to lose my glycogen. That's how I create my power for the bike. And that's true. However, there are times when you can begin to reduce that glycogen and get an added benefit, especially if it's in the short term. In this case, as we reduce glycogen, we increase the capacity for our body to utilize stored body fat as an energy source. It's also somewhat of a catharsis for our body. You know, a lot of times our glycogen tanks are always so filled, or in most cases, overfilled and overfilling, that we're putting on body fat and doing all this training and not losing any weight. We're saying, well, what's wrong? It's because our glycogen stores tend to be corrupted. I think that's a good word for it, meaning that we've been storing our glycogen with a lot of junk food. And that's not good quality glycogen. We want to get that stuff out of there. So by using this descending scale, we're removing those carbohydrates, getting the body pumped up, reducing the body fat, and then coming right back into a healthy mode of eating. But again, the food hasn't shifted. I'm still eating healthy, wholesome foods. I'm still eating fruits and vegetables. I'm still eating healthy, you know, low-fat meats. I'm still eating, you know, grains and cereals, but I'm doing it in smaller quantities. As I'm preparing for a century, the only thing that I'm going to shift is I'm going to move carbohydrates more to the forefront. But I'm not going to change the actual food selections. They're still going to be very healthy, nutrient-dense foods. But instead of using, you know, removal of carbohydrates, what I want to do now at this stage is maximize my glycogen stores without overfilling. And what that means is that every human being on the planet has only a set ability to store sugar in the liver and the working muscles. And for the most part, that quantity that each of us individually can store is for the most part fixed. Now, we can oscillate it a little bit with good conditioning and training, meaning that the more fit you get, the more glycogen capacity you may have. More importantly, the more proficient you'll be at utilizing that glycogen. What most of us will tend to do, though, is that, hey, I got the century coming up, so I want to be carb-loading this and carb-loading that, and it's pasta every night, and it's pizza, and it's beer, and all this stuff. And next thing you know, those glycogen tanks are definitely full. That's not the problem. The problem is that once your body's glycogen stores are at full capacity, and there's no room left to store that sugar, your body has no alternative physiologically but then to reroute that excess sugar back to the liver, goes through a chemical process, turns that body sugar into body fat, stored for later. The bitch of it is that we can't reverse that process. We can't take that body fat, reconvert it back into sugar, and use it for working muscles. That's the problem. So this is where you have to learn how to manipulate, or I guess manipulate is more of a negative word, but that's truly what we're doing. We are tricking the body in a way, or conditioning the body to do hopefully what we're asking it to do. Can I get more performance? Can I get more performance from the glycogen? So you wouldn't want to be removing tons of carbohydrates and then going and riding a century. But you also wouldn't want to be pounding down 3 pizzas beforehand either. It's somewhere in the middle, and each person, it's going to have to be individualized. How many carbohydrates I'm going to require for a good strong century will differ than how many David will require before a good strong century. And the only way you're going to know exactly how many is to listen to your body and trial and error. And any other expert that tries to tell you that there's some formula that you can just figure out and poof, that's going to solve your problems, you can get pretty close, but it's not going to answer every question for you. The only way to do it is to listen to yourself and try.
So, yeah, that and common sense, it sounds like, is what nutrition is all about.
Sound like a cop-out, though. I mean, I think it's too easy for common sense to sound like a cop-out, but I think that in the case of nutrition, after having worked literally with thousands and thousands of customers, both individually and around the world, common sense a lot of times is the one major thing that people just aren't utilizing. They're looking for answers in software. They're looking for answers in experts. They're looking for answers in books. But what they're not using is what they've already got, which is good common sense. They say, well, hey, you know, that diet sounds pretty cool and it might have worked for someone else, but I just don't know if I can drink milk 4 times a day every day for all the food that I eat. So I just don't know if that's good for me. That's common sense. You know, it's common sense that, you know, you probably shouldn't be eating food that, you know, that's loaded with sugar. We all know that. A lot of people just aren't doing it.
Isn't that what mom always told us?
Yeah.
I mean, mine did, and I know my wife's always telling my kids that, so that makes sense.
Well, I think, go ahead.
Yeah, listen, we're getting close to, you know, we're using a lot of time here, and I sort of want to go to a little bit of a lightning round here. I'm going to ask you a couple of questions and get some quick answers. But before I do, we had one other listener who sent in a question, so again, I'm going to set this up, and hopefully it's going to work, and I will play this for you through the microphone. Here we go.
Hi, David. This is Christopher in Chattanooga. I just wanted to send you a quick email because I didn't know if I was going to be able to come online tonight. I have 3 questions. The first one, what types of foods should I avoid to get the weight off quicker? Second part, is there any types of supplements I should take? And third, for someone 5'5", 160 pounds, what should be my calorie intake? Anyway, keep up the good work. Love the podcast. If you ever need anything, just let me know.
Okay. Easy questions, right?
Yeah, piece of cake.
All right, once you get done with this, I think we'll be in the lightning round, but as quickly as you can.
What was his first one again?
Well, that's a good question. Let's go back to it again. You didn't get all that down, Graham? Come on. All right. Well, first of all, let's talk about supplements first, because that was another question that we were asked on the chat room. But let's talk about supplements. What should cyclists be doing for supplements?
Multivitamin guaranteed. I think a good quality multivitamin is a must, especially if you're an avid cyclist doing, you know, 50, 100, 150 plus miles per week. Absolutely, multivitamin has to be in there. That's just to cover your bets, meaning that, you know, you're going to get, even if you're eating wholesome food, your body's in a high energy state. It's going to want those added antioxidants. It's going to want the added B vitamins to produce energy, all those things. So multivitamin's a guarantee. Other beneficial things that I think that everyone should be taking that would be a benefit, you know, a multi-oil, whether it's flaxseed oil, whether it's fish oil, whether it's a combination of the two. Bottom line, a strong cardiovascular system is a strong cyclist. Your lungs, your cardiovascular system, your heart, that is the engine that is pumping those legs. And if it's weak and frail, you are not going to be pumping those legs very strong. And fat has really gotten a bad rap because we've associated with the fat that we eat is all bad, and that's not true. In fact, it couldn't be further from the truth. The bottom line is that you have to have the healthy fats in there to produce that strong heart. You can get that stuff at a wholesome food store, whatever you want to do. Those are different options. I think number 3, you know, an antioxidant in addition to a multivitamin, that can definitely have benefit. It depends on how much you want to start to spend on this kind of stuff, but definitely vitamin A, vitamin C, vitamin E, selenium, these things are basically the workhorses of the human body to scavenge damage. When you do exercise, you cause damage. We want to repair that damage as fast as we can so we can get back on the bike and have a great ride the next time we go. So those 3 are definitely would be my top picks or staples. If you want to go beyond that, you know, we can talk about whey protein. We can talk about performance-enhancing stuff. We can talk about electrolytes. But I think we're getting too far for most people.
Yeah,
it's all secondary because most people aren't focusing on the nuts and bolts. But the bottom line is that no one should really ever be asking me about supplements until they can prove to me that they're eating a wholesome food nutrition plan. If they're not eating a wholesome food nutrition plan, the supplements really, at the end of the day, are a waste of money. I'm not trying to be a jerk when I say that, but it's true. I don't want my customers wasting money. And your money into good quality food. If you do that, then the supplements can really start to make a difference. But the supplements without the wholesome food really is not going to do a lot for us. I wish that it would, but there is no magic pill. There is no magic bullet. All there is good, healthy eating.
So you're taking a multivitamin. A lot of multivitamins, though, have A, C, E, and the things that you talked about.
Yep.
How do you know when you're taking too much? I mean, if you've got a good multivitamin and you start doing some of these antioxidants, at a certain point, aren't you taking too much, and can't that actually be bad for you?
It depends. I mean, the fat-soluble vitamins in overdose, you know, quantities, whether it's D, K, or some of the other ones, that could definitely be problematic. You'd have to work pretty hard to overdose on those kinds of things.
Okay.
I think that if you're eating a wholesome food diet and you're taking one multivitamin a day or one packet of multivitamins a day, you're probably in pretty good standing. Again, the quality of the multivitamin is going to make a big difference. We could go on for hours about the quality of vitamins and supplements. I talk about a lot about supplements in my Cycle of Fuel Nutrition program, because again, these are major topics and concerns, one that's way beyond just the couple minutes we have left. But again, at the end of the day, those three are good places to start. Focus on your nutrition first, and the supplements will follow, and those will get you the results after the other stuff's in place.
And I think the first question that from the caller was what foods to avoid, and I think you really talked about that earlier.
I think
that was pretty clear. The third one, and I don't even think you can answer it, you know, based on his height and his weight, you know, caloric intake.
Yep. The caloric intake, I get questions like this about a lot about Cycle of Fuel. You know, Graham, how can you possibly make Cycle of Fuel and not talk about calories? Well, I'm going to give you a couple of reasons why. Number one, having worked with all different kinds of customers and clients, when I start talking about calories and saying, hey, if we hit our benchmark at 1,780 calories today, we are right on track. Man, that'll work for a customer for maybe, if they're willing to do it. First of all, most customers will never be willing to do that for me. You know, Graham, I have to weigh this stuff out and count my calories and do all that stuff. Graham, I can barely, manage my bank account each day. How can I possibly do that? So that's obstacle number one. So again, it comes down to practicality. Number two, when we're talking about calories, as I mentioned earlier, your calories are probably going to oscillate every day, every week, every month, but they're going to kind of find some kind of general mean over time, meaning an average. And that average is going to kind of dictate the oscillation of your physiology. And I don't want to get overly complex here, but what that means is that, you might eat 1,800 calories one day and 1,600 the next. You know, if you equal them together, you're at 1,700 on even, probably going to maintain that over time. With calories, I think it's more prudent and important for the individual to focus on the quality of the food first. My argument is simple. If you focus on good, quality, wholesome nutrition food, and you remove the sugar and you remove the junk, your calories will fall into perfect alignment on their own without counting anything. And that's what most nutritionists, most gurus don't want you to believe. They don't want you to believe that your body has the ability to regulate itself. I'm not trying to harp on this, but overall, as a society, we've been kind of duped to believe by media sources and friends and diet books that, hey, you gotta be on some strict regimen and you'd be told what to do, otherwise your body can't possibly make its own decisions. And that's just not true. Long before there were diet plans and diet books and all this stuff, we didn't have a weight problem. We had people that just ate when they were hungry and they didn't eat when they weren't hungry. They ate wholesome foods because refined foods didn't exist 100 years ago. It was just wholesome stuff you pulled out of the ground or made yourself. And we didn't have obese people. And now we've got this, everyone's kind of paranoid and in a state of paralysis going, oh my God, what should I do? What should I do? Well, eat healthy, eat often, feed your metabolism, don't starve yourself, be good to yourself, stay away from the junk, stay away from the things, that have the million-dollar endorsement contracts attached to them, and you're probably going to be all set. And again, it's my Cycle of Fuel Nutrition program is not rocket science. All I really did was create a working system that I knew would work for the masses in multiple different ways over time, and that not only would my customers, the avid cyclists, enjoy it, but more importantly, their spouses, their children, their family. It would be something that everyone could work with and for. And the best compliments I've gotten so far about that program is, hey, Graham, not only have I lost weight and I'm feeling great and I feel like I've got structure behind my nutrition, but my wife is really enjoying this too. She jumped on board and we're cooking together and my kids love the food. That is when you have power. Because now when you have that energy coming in, not only from the food you're eating, but from the positivity of the people around you, now hop on that bike and you're invincible. You can do anything.
Okay, lightning round. You ready?
Ready.
Caffeine.
Yeah.
Tell me. Should they get off the caffeine? I mean, just real quick, quick story.
I have a cup of coffee myself every morning. I love it. I can't live without it. So I love the taste of coffee. I like the caffeine. Pros and cons, real simple. Pros of caffeine: stimulates the nervous system, causes you to focus, great for performance. Negatives of caffeine: causes your blood sugars to go up, which in turn causes your insulin to go up, which causes you to have a sugar crash later on in the day. Each person's going to react different. People that have been drinking coffee for years, if you removed it, you know, you're probably going to go insane for a couple of days, but they're going to get over it and poof, they're healthy. It could increase blood pressure, but again, these are things you have to weigh out for yourself. This is why, you know, caffeine's banned in the, you know, from the IOC, and it's banned in a couple other different kinds of sporting events because, you know, caffeine can improve performance. I think like anything else, it shouldn't be abused. So if you're addicted to caffeine, you're drinking diet sodas all day long, you're drinking, you know, 3 or 4 cups of coffee or more a day, yeah, I'd say that's probably not helping you. It's probably hurting you. You're probably better off by minimizing that caffeine and using it, you know, more, whether for enjoyment in the morning or afternoon or whenever you like to have it, or, you know, right before or during a ride. I get different effects from caffeine. Sometimes it does me really well. Sometimes it really messes me up. It causes me to kind of lose my focus because it affects my insulin and glucose.
Okay, so caffeine.
But again, that's going to be a judgment call. I'm not going to tell any of my customers not to drink caffeine. All I can tell you is what I know on both sides. You can make your own decision from there. But I think at the end of the day, just having a cup of coffee a day, I don't think is going to, you know, cause major affliction to your body.
Okay, so there you heard it. You heard it here. Graham Street says caffeine not as evil as most people would lead you to believe. Next question: chocolate milk. I've heard from a couple of people, and I've read that it is a great recovery drink. Agree or disagree?
If you're in college and that's all you can afford, sure. I think, you know, it's got protein in there. It's got sugar. I think that lactose, probably the most evil sugar for the human body overall, because it's not the kinds of sugar your body was intended to ingest. Sometimes it does well with some people that are, you know, lactose intolerant or aren't even lactose intolerant, still just don't react well to it. But again, it has all the essential protein and sugars you would want for post-workout recovery, but is it your best selection? Absolutely not.
Okay, what is a good selection?
I wouldn't be drinking chocolate milk after a ride. I don't want to promote any of my partners, but I would be consuming a powdered style protein and carbohydrate matrix, one that is very low in refined sugars, very high in antioxidants, very high in glutamine, very high in branched chain amino acids. As many of my customers know, my co-sponsor for my company now is Hammer Nutrition. So they're really my point people, but I'm not going to sit here and try to make everyone say, hey, Hammer Nutrition is the only way to go. I think the bottom line is to realize that a good, easily digested post-workout recovery drink should have more than just refined sugar and, you know, milk protein. It probably should be a little bit more refined than that if you want to get the most out of it. I'm not saying you can't use it. I'm just saying that it's probably not the best selection. There's a difference.
Okay, next question in the lightning round, the second to last. Portion control. You mentioned it just in passing. And I think that for a lot of people, when they start really paying attention to their nutrition, is probably the most difficult thing to figure out. Any tips there that you could give people?
The best tip I can give is the 7-day fat loss cycle. You know, I grew up in a family where, you know, I was subject, you know, I had a lot of sugary foods available as a kid, and I developed certain, you know, I don't care what anyone says, sugar is probably the most addictive thing on the planet, more than tobacco, more than heroin, more than anything. Once you start getting it in your system, you know, your body craves more, and that's because of the insulin turning over and your body, your glucose dropping back down and going back up. Anyway, for a lot of people, that are ingesting a lot of carbohydrates in their diet, they do develop somewhat of a sugar addiction. It's that sugar addiction, really, that causes the perpetuation of not being able to control their portion sizes. Or the other obstacle that a lot of people face that leads to overeating at meals is that they're not using smaller, more balanced meals during the day, meaning that they're not using small snacks between meals, or they're skipping breakfast or skipping meals that leads to huge consumptions of foods later in the day, typically at night at like 8 or 9 o'clock for dinner, which is the worst time you'd want to overconsume food. I think the way around this, the 7-day fat loss cycle was designed to help any sugar junkie of any kind. Once you can get past day 2 of the 7-day fat loss cycle, you're golden. You're going to really do well, and you're going to press right through. And I think by the time you get done with it, not only are you going to be 3 to 5 pounds lighter, but more importantly, you've really hopefully established now a more wholesome, sugar-free or low-sugar concept that you can move into the maintenance and performance phase.
Okay, so great. So to get toward portion control, start weaning yourself off of sugar. Do a 7-day program.
It's typically the carbohydrates that causes the problem. You know, most you're not going to see many people, you know, sitting there over consuming, you know, just a T-bone steak. Typically, where they're over consuming is the baked potato on the side, and you know, there are all the rices and pastas that go along with it.
That's me.
That protein or fat can't be a part, but typically it's the carbohydrates that perpetuate the need and want for more carbohydrates. And I'm not saying that carbohydrates are evil. What I'm saying is most people aren't taking an active role to pay attention to the kinds of carbohydrates they're eating. And eventually what they're doing is they're causing their body to become hungry again. They're like, man, I just had my thing of pretzels and everything, and man, I want more pretzels.
Right.
I want more bagels, and I want more donuts. I can't stop. Well, it's because your body's constantly taking the blood glucose, dragging it up. Insulin's getting pumped out. It's dragging it down. It gets too low. Your body wants it back up again, where if you were to have more small meals, you know, spaced out through the day with a little bit more protein, a little bit more fat in there, your body's going to receive a little more what we call satiation. It's not going to feel as hungry. Carbohydrates are not great for creating satiation, where protein and fat are. So if you're trying to kind of use that complementation idea like we talked about a little bit earlier, you're going to be better. Now, this is not like a one-size-fits-all and poof, you're fixed tomorrow. You're going to have to practice. And again, this is where the participation part of nutrition comes in. I can tell you all this stuff, but if you're not willing to practice and be a little patient and stick to a regimented plan, you know, whether it's mine or someone else's, it's going to be tough. You're going to have to create commitment. And, you know, passion without commitment is really just a wish, and you're not going to get much from a wish unless you really want to put it into action.
Last question, and it was something, again, that you mentioned at the very top of the show. You mentioned that you eat for nutrition and not for pleasure. But I've got to figure that there are plenty of times in the year when, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. Do you occasionally go out and eat for pleasure? I mean, for instance,
absolutely.
You know, you go to your mom's house, or, you know, you go to that great restaurant that
absolutely.
You remember from when you were a kid. Is this an everything in moderation thing? And if so, how often should somebody be eating for pleasure, if you will?
Well, first of all, I have pizza with my wife every Friday night. That's a tradition that will never change in my life. I'm a pizza lover. What I tend to look at is how can I compromise? I love pizza. You know, usually if we go out for pizza, like Pizza Hut, I try to avoid like crazy because it just doesn't make my stomach feel well. It's one of those common sense things. I eat it. I don't feel good. Hey, maybe I shouldn't eat that again. But I still like pizza. So what do? Well, I found actually one place around my area that delivers actually really non-greasy, really healthy pizza. We try to get more vegetables put on it than, you know, pepperoni and that kind of stuff. That's a compromise. Is it the perfect solution? Could I have had a healthier dinner on that Saturday night? Well, sure. But I didn't want to. I wanted to have the pizza. And I think that at the end of the day, any nutrition plan you put on paper that looks great and perfect and everything's great and there's no saturated fat and there's no sugar or anything probably is not going to be a plan that most people are going to stick with for very long. So although all night long we've said remove all that junk, I'm not saying that if you had it once in a week, once in a month, once in a blue moon, no big deal. In fact, if something emotionally makes you happy and you can stay in control of it, then go ahead. I mean, otherwise, what's the point? I mean, I'm not out here riding my bike every day. so I can go earn a paycheck, you know, from a local race. I'm doing it because I love to do it. I want to feel great. I want to do the best I can and perform better. But am I willing to go back to my bodybuilding days and restrict, you know, every single food where I wouldn't allow myself to have ketchup on certain things because ketchup had a little bit of sugar in it? I wouldn't allow myself to, you know, have any sugar in my coffee, even though I hated coffee without sugar. I hated it. Ugh. So, I mean, you have to make those kinds of decisions for yourself. There is no perfection in nutrition. All there is, I think, improvement and practicality. So, yeah, if you want to have a beer and a couple slices of pizza on Saturday night, great. Enjoy it. Embrace it. You know, be grateful for it. But if you want to move into Sunday morning and be really strict and go after, you know, a great ride for 60 or 70 miles and really be diligent about your food, embrace that too. It's your decision. But at the end of the day, we're looking for my bottom line with my customers. I try to give them what I call the 80-20 rule. If you can be doing pretty well and eating wholesome food, unrefined stuff, 80% of the time, give or take, and you're making either quote-unquote mistakes or you're making conscious decisions to have some more fun with your food 20% of the time, you're doing all right. I think you're really doing great. And that means that your body's getting healthier, you're feeling stronger. The funny thing is when you hit that 80-20 rule, next thing you'll know, about 6 months later, you'll find yourself at the 90-10 rule. And the reason why is that the healthier you eat over time, the more results you tend to feel, the more vitality you begin to develop, the more performance you begin to feel, it begins to perpetuate on itself. You want more of it, almost like an addiction itself. But it's a healthier addiction. It's one that you're making a conscious decision to decide to do. No one's inflicting it on you. There's a difference.
I think that's a great, it totally did, and I think it's a great place to end because, it tells everybody that they really, not only do they have control over what they're eating and about how their body's going to look, but it also tells them, you know what, you're also allowed to be human. A lot of people say you only go around once, and if that's true, you really should enjoy yourself. That is exactly why most of us are cyclists. And so we enjoy being on the bike. We should certainly enjoy what we're eating, but we should, you know, eat the right things. But occasionally, like you said, if we want to go out and as you said, have some pizza and beer, go for it. But just make sure that you're doing it in moderation. I think that's great. Graham, I want to thank you for your time. This definitely went way longer than I thought it was going to because I had so many questions and because you're just a fountain of knowledge. And I have a feeling we could do this for hours and hours, but I don't know that people would be sticking around and listening. But thank you for your time once again for coming on the Fredcast. Everybody should know that they can find more information about you and about your programs at cyclo-core.com or just go to www.thefredcast.com. And because I like your programs so much, I actually put a little button on the page that says I recommend your programs because my family and I are getting a lot out of them. Like I said, my wife and daughters are training to do a ride with me and, you know, we're all out in the living room sweating to what you're doing. And I think I emailed you a couple of days ago and I said, you killed me because I did one of your yoga spin programs and I was just dying. But again, thanks for coming on. Thanks for all of your time. And thanks for everybody for coming on and asking so many good questions in the chat room and also for asking questions either in email or in audio comments or coming on the phone tonight. I sounded good tonight. Thanks to everybody in the chat room and thanks to everybody's emails. So, Graham, thanks again. Have a great evening. We will talk to you again soon, I'm sure, because I think you have a lot more information. And to everybody listening on TalkShoe, thanks for listening to the Fredcast. This will be part of show number 51, which will come out early next week. And for everybody listening, all I can say is, as I always do, but I'm going to change it just a little bit. Enjoy what you're eating and enjoy the ride. Thanks, everybody. Appreciate you coming on. And that's going to do it for tonight's show. For more information on the Fredcast or on Graham's programs, go to www.thefredcast.com. All the information about this program, other podcasts, links, show notes can be found right there on the page, as well as a link to Graham Street's cyclocore.com website. You'll find that link in a button on the left-hand side of the page at www.thefredcast.com. To contact us here at The Fredcast, send an email to thefredcast@gmail.com or drop us an audio comment via the Fredcast listener hotline at area code 206-203-FRED. We'll be back again in a couple of days with a regular show. Thanks again to Cambria Bicycle Outfitter for sponsoring the show. For more information on them, again, go to www.thefredcast.com. Thanks for listening. Hope you've enjoyed the show, but most of all, enjoy the ride.